Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this Air France message. With Air France, your journey to France begins when you set foot on the plane, starting with a complimentary glass of champagne in every class. And in business and la première, savor a five-course meal with cheese and wine and unique menus created by some of the greatest French chefs. Enjoy a taste of France before you arrive. Bon appétit. Elegance is a journey. Air France.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you, and we are pleased right now to be joined on the hotline here on a Tuesday at 7 o'clock. He is our Odyssey NFL insider during the season. He has the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, which is excellent. You can get him on social media at Ross Tucker NFL. It is a very, very, I would imagine, still jubilant Ross Tucker, whose birds throttled the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl on Sunday. Ross, have you come off your Eagle high yet?
No, not really. I did come off of like one of the best nights sleep of my life, that's for sure.
Yeah.
After my whirlwind. I don't know how much we discussed this, but flew home from the Super Bowl Friday. My sister-in-law had her 40th birthday party Saturday night here in Pennsylvania. It was a party bus brewery tour. So went to bed around 1 and I had a really, really fun night, and I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
Went to bed around 1, got up at 5, went to the Dulles Airport in Virginia, which is like 2 hours from my house, flew directly to New Orleans with my family, went to Bourbon Street, went to a pregame tailgate, went to the game, went to the Eagles postgame party, went right to the airport, and flew on the red eye from New Orleans to Philadelphia, and then landed at Philly, took a car home to my house, did a bunch of shows, got like, a couple hour nap in at some point, I think, and then went to bed at before 8 o'clock last night.
Good,
slept till 6. I never sleep 10 hours straight,
yep.
But I just woke up, I worked out, I feel amazing, I never get to be a dad, I never get to be a fan. You know, you guys know I call over 30 games a year. So, like, there's – usually it's 2 a weekend. So I never get to, like, take my family to a game. And then to go to a game, and it's my daughter's birthday, and it's the Super Bowl, and they kill them, and the whole game is just like a party.
Yeah.
Was just I was very, very happy. Very, very surprised. I mean, I remember early in the second half, I said to my wife, you know, the Eagles stuffed the Chiefs again. And then Saquon broke off a couple. I looked at my wife and go, I said, this is really happening. You know what I mean? Like, I just kept thinking, when is Mahomes going to turn the Mahomes on? You know what I mean? Like, when are the Chiefs going to do their thing? And I guess with 2 minutes left when they were down 40-6, I mean, it never really happened. It's just like, there was a lot of scenarios for that game, guys. That was not one that I foresaw.
Yeah, and Ross, that was one thing that, you know, we as Texans fans all very much remember. It's emblazoned in our souls that being up 24-0 on the Chiefs doesn't always do it for you. In the 2019 playoffs, the Texans were up 24-0, and it didn't end well for the Texans. I didn't have the same feel that might happen in that game, because in the Super Bowl, just because the Eagles defense was playing so phenomenally well. Was there any part of you that worried about, okay, man, Xavier Worthy might break out three times and have three deep strikes or anything? Or was it obvious and apparent to you watching, and you being there in person, able to see the coverages better than you can on TV at times? Was it clear to you when it was 24-0 that, okay, I'm pretty sure they've got this in the bag?
I felt very, very, very good about it. Couple things, right? So our seats were pretty high, but that dome is cool, man. There's like not a bad seat in the house. I felt like I was just watching like the All-22 tape, you know, like you think you want to be lower, but I kind of loved I kind of loved where we were at. And the two things that were cool is in the stadium, they keep showing like the next gen stats. And when I looked at the first half, or maybe after the first drive of the third quarter, and it was 5 sacks, 11 pressures, and 0 blitzes by the Eagles, I was like, oh my God, they're killing them. And the other thing that was really obvious, you never see Mahomes looking that bad or that confused. You know, the Eagles have a really good secondary, and Fangio had a great plan. And when you can just drop 7 and you know, do different coverages, he was never comfortable. Like he never was in a good spot. He looked confused. He had to hold the ball, which he usually doesn't. And when you do that, the Eagles, they just come at you in waves. And I was actually thinking about talking with you guys this morning. That's one thing that kind of jumps out to me. Because of the Texans' D-line and because of the Texans' secondary, you guys have the formula. Like, you're not that far away. I mean, obviously, you're not as good as the Eagles, but I would say in terms of the formula that the Eagles showed, how many teams are really closer than the Texans in terms of having that D-line and then that type of coverage group?
Well, that's where I think the Texans are close, but I think one of the differences would be that the four-man rush, it's awesome in theory, and it's so simple to talk about. Like, hey, all you got to do is get a four-man pass rush. The thing is, it's got to be astoundingly good to be that dependent upon it, because at some point, if there's going to be times where, okay, you don't get pressure on the quarterback, and especially if it's Pat Mahomes, that he's going to find a way. Something's going to come open. So I think with the Texans, what I look at it as, man, they need to really be that consistently menacing as a four-man rush. They got to have somebody who's an absolute terror on the inside as a defensive tackle. And they've got guys who played well and I think have played above their pay grade at defensive tackle this year, but they don't have anybody like Jalen Curtis. That's why I'm not going to be surprised at all if they end up drafting a defensive tackle in the first round for that reason.
Well, yeah, Carter's incredible, and you're right about that. I would say one of the things that jumps out to me, though, like rewatching the game, is how well, like, the other guys for the Eagles played. Now, Sweat is kind of a known commodity, and that was his best game of the year. And Jalen Carter played really well. But these other guys, Milton Williams, who's going to be a free agent, and my guess is he's going to get a lot of money from somewhere else, he was awesome in that game. Mm-hmm. Nolan Smith was fantastic. And, you know, guys, he played almost the whole last preseason game. Like, I thought, man, that's not going to be a good pick. Like, I really thought watching him this training camp, this preseason, that he just didn't have a pass rush plan, that it just wasn't going to happen for him. He led the NFL, I think, in sacks in the playoffs. And then the one that really is crazy, when you go back and watch it, Jalix Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, 2 years ago, was playing safety for Cornell. Then he transfers to Houston Baptist or Houston Christian or something, which, by the way, that's a whole other story. Who does that, right? Who transfers from Cornell to Houston Baptist or Christian? He does that. He moves to D-end. The Eagles take him just on potential in the third round. And by the end of the year, Bryce Huff, they're paying $17 million a year to, is inactive for the Super Bowl. Hunt is out there and had like 6 pressures and 5 quarterback hits or something crazy.
Yeah, I think the thing with, but for me, a lot of the straw that stirs that drink with those guys is those defensive ends were getting single blocks, you know, and Jalen Carter had to be accounted for. And it's just, that's where, like, if you got two awesome defensive ends, you can still account for that as an offense. But if you've got two awesome defensive ends, but then a guy who's an absolute nightmare on the interior, you run out of solutions in pass protection, you know, without just max protecting every time. So that's where I felt like it's almost like the pass rush version of a nose tackle in the run game at that point. It's just that he has to be accounted for, and it makes the guys on the edges that much better.
Totally agree. I do think, you know, there were times when DeNico had some good rushes, settle, but I would agree. I wouldn't be surprised if Casario tries to add there.
Ross Tucker joining us here on Sports Radio 610. Ross, so on the offensive side for the Eagles, I feel like Jalen Hurts has been getting kind of, you know, maybe short shrift over the last couple of years, just in terms of where he stacks up among quarterbacks. You know, it felt like Saquon appropriately got a ton of the credit for the Eagles offensively this season. But Jalen Hurts has now been to two Super Bowls and won a Super Bowl in his first 4 or 5 years as a starter in the league. Do you think when we're going through the offseason here and we're looking at everybody's quarterback power rankings and things like that, is Jalen Hurts going to be talked about, do you think, on that same level as the Mahomes and the Allens and the Jacksons of the world?
No, he's not, and I don't think he should.
Okay.
I think for the Eagles, he very clearly plays his best when it matters the most, like the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl, and that is highly encouraging. But those other guys are like every week guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, those other guys are top five quarterbacks for a reason. They are the reason why their teams win games. I don't think you can say that about Hurts. You know, I think in a lot of games this year, he wasn't really the reason why they lost. I mean, why they won, but he wasn't the reason why they lost either, which is why they won so many games. He was a major reason why they won the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, which he deserves a ton of credit for. The thing that's really mind-boggling to me is, you know, he did not play that well against the Packers or the Rams the first two rounds of the playoffs, okay? So picture that they won the last two games by 4 or 5 scores. He really probably could have played average or not that great in the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, and they still would have won both. Now, they would have been closer games, but they still would have won both. That tells you something about the Eagles, that they could have won 4 playoff games, won the Super Bowl, with their quarterback playing average to, like, maybe slightly below average in every game, and they still would have won.
Yeah, it's crazy, Ross. And we're going to get to my front page story here in a second. But while you're saying that, I said this to Seth yesterday. I said, the Eagles beat the Redskins 55-23, and that felt like a close game, as crazy as that is to sound, till midway through the third quarter, till the Commanders fumbled the third time. They beat the Chiefs by 18, so literally like 2 touchdowns less, and that game never felt close ever. It was. Would you agree with that? Like that Commanders game was actually a game until late in the third quarter.
Yes, and it was definitely a game until the double tap by the Eagles at the end of the first half. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's 14-12, and they throw the 4th and 5 to A.J. Brown. Then they score a touchdown. Then the Commanders fumble the returning kickoff. Then the Eagles scored again to make it whatever it was, 27-12 at halftime.
Yeah,
I mean, it was 14-12 right before then. Then even when it was 27-12, I can't remember if the Commanders scored or they were driving or whatever. No, that game definitely felt more competitive. That's the other thing. Like, people are always talking about, you know, Mahomes and is he better than Brady or whatever. I got to be honest with you guys. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, there might have been a Ravens game one time or a Jets game one time in, like, the divisional round.
Yeah.
But I can't really ever remember Tom Brady looking as badly as poorly or as bad as Mahomes did Sunday. I mean, that was it looked like he didn't know where to go with the ball.
Never.
Both interceptions were terrible.
Yep.
He's holding on to it. I mean, the one that really killed me, he rolls out to the right. There's nobody within 20 yards of DeAndre Hopkins. And maybe Hopkins should have caught it, but, like, those guys usually complete that in their sleep, you know, or even like the one to a couple to Kelsey where it's like, whoa, I mean,
he's throwing it at his feet.
You don't see that very often. I remember when Cooper DeJean, you guys will appreciate this. I could not hold it anymore. I had to pee. So I'm in line at the stadium. Thankfully, they have TVs everywhere. And like most of the people there were Eagles fans. So most of the line is Eagles fans. We're all looking up at the TV, and that's when Cooper DeJean had to pick six. So while I wish I was with my family for that, it was actually like a surreal moment, high-fiving and going crazy with random guys in the bathroom line as Cooper DeJean takes it to the house. It was hilarious.
Okay, at least you're,
I wish somebody videoed that.
At least you're high-fiving him going into the bathroom and not coming out
before
of the bathroom.
Before we went in, we went in.
That's good.
At the urinal,
Hey, Ross, before we get you out of here, Valentine's Day, Friday, people still got time to get on myfrontpagestory.com?
Yes, this actually is a good sports talk radio topic because I haven't decided yet what's better. Like, is it better if you go to myfrontpagestory.com like 2 weeks ago, you order the story for your significant other, it gets sent there, it's framed, it's beautiful, you give it to her on Valentine's Day, she cries, she loves it. I actually kind of like the idea of ordering it now at myfrontpagestory.com. You print out, okay, you go and you print out the order form, put it in an envelope, give it to her on Valentine's Day and say, honey, I'm having a story professionally written right now by an author about how amazing you are, how special you are, and it'll be here soon. I just can't wait for you to see it. Can you imagine them like going to the mail every day or like waiting the UPS or FedEx guy? Or what, like the anticipation, if you're someone that's never had anybody write anything about, like the anticipation of wanting to see what was in that story, it's almost like two gifts. It's like Valentine's Day gift, and then whenever it actually gets there, it might be better that way, fellas. Right. Myfrontpagestory.com. She will cry. You will win. Myfrontpagestory.com.
Love it. The anticipation is the gift. The great Ross Tucker. I like that. Myfrontpagestory.com. Hey, Ross, we always appreciate the appearances on here with you, talking to you during the season. Hopefully we catch up with you at some point in the offseason as well. But congrats on a great season, man.
Listen, love coming on with you guys. You know how I feel about both of you. You guys are like way up there among my favorites. And I don't say that to all the other stations. You guys are awesome. Anything big Texans comes up or obviously before the draft, just reach out. Happy to pop on anytime.
All right. Sounds good, Ross. Take care.
See you guys.
Appreciate you. We're good. The great Ross Tucker joining us there.
He said hoppy to pop on, and hoppy. I thought of Hop on Pop. That's a guy that's been reading to his nieces and nephews.
A lot of Dr. Seuss going on in his life. Yeah. that was interesting. So he's on board for Caserio and D'Amico finding a big hoss in the middle of the defensive line.
I think
you are too. I think you.
I think that. I mean, D'Amico just loves his defensive linemen because he knows that they're the engine that makes everything else go. I can remember having conversations with Vic Fangio back when he was my coach about just how easy it makes things if you can do two things. One, if you can get a four-man pass rush, and two, if you can stop the run with your front seven. If you don't have to bring up a guy in the box to stop the run, and it makes everything a lot easier. Every defensive coordinator dreams of that, and because all of your little whiteboard meanderings and everything, it's fuel to the fire when you can do it with the four guys up front in the pass rush or the seven guys up front or six guys in modern football. And the Texans, one of the things they're really missing there is just a genuine stud at defensive tackle. So I think D'Amico's thirst for a defensive lineman is probably a lot higher than most of the fan bases because obviously offensive guard is an issue and wide receiver, but D'Amico's wired that way to, man, like, get me some guys that can just consistently make quarterbacks uncomfortable.
Text message, too bad there's not too many Jalen Carters out there. No, that's true.
Right,
Jalen Carter's elite.
Yeah.
My counter to that as it relates to the Texans, would be there aren't many Will Anderson Juniors out there. You're not going to be the level of eliteness of the players is not going to exactly mirror along the line. You know,
Nolan Smith is not a perfect defensive end at slash outside linebacker by any stretch of the imagination, but he gets opportunities and does the most with them because of the other guys on the defensive line. Yeah. So yeah, it's and that's why. No matter how many times I preface it with it's easier said than done, yeah, it's hard to get that. That's why it's not the old, hey, all you got to do to Tom Brady is get pressure up the middle with a four-man pass rush. Right. It's hard to do. It's really, really hard to do. Sorry, man. Sorry I'm not giving you the easy solutions. Sorry, I just like, draft any sludge. You know where else it's hard to find really, really good football players? Every single position, on the football team.
Yeah, for sure.
Every single damn position.
This is another texter. I'm convinced that if the Texans had drafted Jalen Carter, we would have won the Super Bowl this year. End of story. Mahomes doesn't like a beast in the middle. Neither does Lamar. And that would have shut down Derrick Henry. Sir, I will point out to you, or ma'am, that there are two sides of the football. Jalen Carter would not have helped the Texans' offensive line protect C.J. Stroud. Like the issue with the Texans was not the defense. You know what I mean? Like the way...
Right, yeah. The offense just flat out didn't show up when they most needed it.
Yeah, if you drafted Jalen Carter, you don't have Will Anderson on this team. You know, like that's the thing. It's
right, well, I guess it's okay, if they draft Jalen Carter and they have a lesser edge rusher there.
Yep.
Would it have made that big of a difference? No, because it wouldn't have. That's not what it would have transformed them into a completely different defense.
It's not enough to make it's right to make up for the lack of offense, right?
I guess, but by your scenario, the way you framed it is they should have, you know, instead of trading up for Will Anderson or getting Jalen Carter, they should have gotten an offensive lineman.
I'm not even thinking that far ahead. I'm just thinking like there's no move on defense that would have made up for how bad this offense was
right,
in the playoffs.
Right.
That's my point. Like it's the issue with the Texans in the postseason wasn't how they got after Patrick Mahomes. The issue was they couldn't move the football and they couldn't protect C.J. Stroud. That's the issue with this team. The defense is not an issue right now. It can be better. It can be improved, but it's really, really good. The issue is this team scored 12 points on offense in Kansas City. The issue is that this team continually couldn't score touchdowns in the second half of football games all year. So I can't look at the defense and go, well, if they just drafted Jalen Carter instead of Will Anderson, they're going to the Super Bowl. That's what this person is saying right now. You still have the exact same offense in that scenario. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my point.
Sounds like you're arguing against taking a defensive tackle in the first round too.
No, I'm arguing that the issue is what this person is pointing out does not turn the Texans into a Super Bowl team this year because the offense is so bad.
No, but I'm saying I'm not upset about it. I'm just saying that if by my the same token, if I'm thirsty for a defensive tackle because it could take the defense to another level, that's probably not going to beat the Chiefs in the playoffs.
Okay, I'm not arguing that, and here's why. I think Nick Caley's going to make a difference.
I'm trying to agree with you.
No.
I'm
totally cool with them drafting a defensive tackle in the first round. I'm totally cool with that. I think there's other ways to improve the offense other than not drafting a defensive tackle in the first round. You know what I mean? That's all I was saying. Let's see. Text message. Jalen Carter would have helped us beat the Chiefs. Yes, that he definitely would have. Thank you. Texans beat the Chiefs with Jalen Carter.
I guess. Well, you don't have to make it a Will Anderson versus Jalen Carter argument.
The only reason I'm making it that is because that's the draft. Like they wouldn't have drafted Will Anderson in that scenario.
Right.
That's the only reason I'm saying it is if you have Jalen Carter on this team, Texter. Will Anderson is not on this team.
Right.
You know, it was that draft that they would, instead of moving up to get Will Anderson, they would have moved up three spots to get Jalen Carter.
Well, and again, too, the thing you have to remember about the Eagles is they've got three first-rounders on their defensive line. It's not an either-or scenario. They should have drafted this guy. They shouldn't have drafted that guy. They've invested heavily on their defensive line.
Okay, here's another one. Or this is middle screen. Or they draft Will Anderson and then draft Jalen Carter instead of taking C.J. Stroud. Like, draft Will with the second pick. And then with that, you just go deep on the defensive line. I'd rather have C.J. Stroud on this football team.
If there's one thing you learn from the Chiefs' loss, it's that it doesn't matter who you are as a quarterback when the pass protection is that bad. You might as well have had you might as well have had just any random quarterback out there for the Chiefs. And it may be one that, I don't know, like he was a garbage quarterback in the Super Bowl.
He was
awful.
He was
atrocious.
He was, but you're also probably not in the playoffs if that's your strategy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're not winning regular.
No, I know. I'm just making the point that it doesn't, when you don't have the pass protection taken care of,
yeah,
it doesn't matter who your quarterback is.
Who was the big defensive tackle we passed on for Kenyon Green? That's a text message. That would be Jordan Davis, who's also part of the rotation with Philadelphia.
Yes, he's one of those first rounders for the Eagles. Yes. That's 100%. Where the Eagles have invested heavily in their defensive line and the Texans didn't.
Yeah.
They chose to go with Kenyon Green instead.
That's right. We didn't touch on this yesterday. Apparently, according to multiple sources, Aaron Rodgers will not be back in New York with the Jets. Aaron Glenn, I guess, does not want him back. Reportedly, there was a meeting with Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if it was with Glenn and ownership or whatever. But Aaron Rodgers is going to be either out on the market or retired come next season.
Yeah, I don't. What do you think? I have a hard time thinking that Aaron Rodgers really genuinely wants to go through any more of this. The one thing about Aaron Rodgers is a guy who's in his 40s. Whenever he gets interviewed, he does not come off like a guy who's an NFL football player just by the way he looks and talks and his age.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't sense that same verve or that same competitive drive or fire that, like, say, Tom Brady had when he was in his early 40s.
Even when the Rodgers stands out there on social media, try to stick up for him and post video of him behind the scenes, you know, like getting amped up about football, like getting his team fired up. Even then, I watch those videos. I'm like, okay, this is still an energy level that's so far below what I would think someone who's being portrayed as this, like, high energetic leader is, you know?
Like, he really feels like a guy who's, I could swap him out for any friends I've had who are in their 40s and who are recently divorced, and they know it was their fault that they're recently divorced, and they're trying to get their life back on track, and they're just kind of like, man, things didn't really work out the way I planned. Because he's smoking a Marlboro, and it just, it's not bad, it's not good, it's just, it is what it is.
I can relate to that.
I feel like Aaron Rodgers is what he is right this
moment. You just made Aaron Rodgers more relatable for me just now with that analogy.
Yeah.
I can relate to that divorce guy you're talking about right there. For what it's worth, odds board, yes is -150 for him retiring. Will he retire? Yes or no? Yes is the favorite. Do you think Aaron Rodgers retires, Seth? Are we done?
I think he retires. I think he retires. The only thing is, if he goes to, if there's somewhere out there that says, yeah, we want to do everything that you want to do on offense, even though you as an offensive coordinator have turned into an antiquated offensive coordinator. Like, Aaron Rodgers and the offense he wants to run with his hand-selected offensive coordinator is a lot of the stuff that people hate. That there's like, where's the pre-snap motion? Where's all of this artistry that you have in so many of the modern offenses? Aaron Rodgers doesn't want it. He wants to play pitch and catch to his favorite guys. And all of his favorite guys are also those recently divorced dudes who totally, it's their fault that they got divorced also.
I'm just looking at the teams that are the favorite to land him if he doesn't stay with the Jets. And looks like at this point he's not going to. Steelers are even money to land him. That would be an interesting marriage. Aaron Rodgers and Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
San Francisco's second on this board at 3-1. San Francisco's going to roll with Brock Purdy. On the cheap. They love Brock Purdy in San Francisco.
Yeah.
They're not.
This continues to be a surprise to you. It's
I'm not surprised that they. I'm not exclaiming surprise. They love Brock Purdy. I'm literally saying they're not going to sign Aaron Rodgers because they love Brock Purdy. I'm not.
Gotcha.
Like, it's they're so I don't think they're in the market for Aaron Rodgers. The Saints are 5-1. Now you're into just a bunch of crappy teams. I'm with you. I think he's done. Because once you start to get to the good teams, they all have quarterbacks already. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think Aaron Rodgers made the mistake of going through a transition where he realized that there's more to life than football. And that's a bad place to be. It's a good place in life, perhaps, but it's a bad place in terms of having that competitive drive to really want to do something about it. Look, I know that Jets fans were somehow just irate that anybody would think that a quarterback willingly missing a mandatory team event was no big deal and that everything would be just fine. I think now they're looking back on it and thinking, oh yeah, maybe a guy who's worth over $100 million not wanting to pay the change fees for his trip to Egypt, that might be a sign that maybe it's time for him to move on.
I still can't believe the people that were giving him a pass on that, including his head coach at the time. How would you feel about
that? I don't know. Okay, I'm going to make it. Look, Robert Saleh was in a no-win situation there. Robert Saleh was getting criticized basically for... It's like blaming a teacher for a misbehaving student. It's like, okay, there's only so much the teacher can do. And if it's in an elite private prep school where the parents have the ability to get you fired if you don't kowtow to their bastard son. That's what Robert Saleh got up, and he's supposed to answer for the quarterback not wanting to be there for OTAs. And, okay, what's he supposed to do? Bring the hammer down on Aaron Rodgers? That's going to go great with an owner that wants Aaron Rodgers there and will do whatever Aaron Rodgers wants.
In retrospect, I guarantee you he wishes he had. He got fired anyways 5 games into the season. Yeah. You know, he ended up being the scapegoat anyways. He probably wishes he had put the hammer down on Aaron Rodgers. Would you mind Aaron Rodgers in the division on either the Titans or the Colts? They're both 15-1. Well, let's see.
I think it would be a flaming disaster with the Colts. I don't think that's the guy you want to bring in to be your mentor to a young quarterback who also doesn't get things anymore. He might have too much perspective on life.
Yeah.
I think the Titans, I might actually get a little bit nervous about it with the Titans.
Really?
Because I think the Titans, they're genuinely committed to running a scheme that Aaron Rodgers has some familiarity with through LaFleur, like a lot of the similar things that would help in the run game and what have you. I don't think the Colts would do it because it's just one more time that they're going back to the aging quarterback while also still having the guy that they claim is their hope and for the future that they're committed to.
They should just do it. They should just sign every aging quarterback for 1 year for the rest of time.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers this year, you know, like next year, Kirk Cousins, bring him in. Just keep bringing in old aging quarterbacks on 1 year deals.
Is Shane Steichen even older than Aaron Rodgers? Probably not, right?
Rodgers is probably about
the same age.
Yeah, about the same age, probably. Rodgers is what, 40, 41, something like that?
Yeah.
Odds are out on the Super Bowl. Texans are 10th on the odds board at 2,500, plus 2,500, 25-1. The AFC South is hot garbage. The bottom 10 teams include the three other teams in the AFC South. The Colts, the Jags, and the Titans are the second worst team in football, according to the odds. And the NFC South is an even worse division. Their best team is Tampa Bay at 35-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Man.
The South must rise again.
Yeah.
Those are bad divisions.
Yeah, the South divisions in general.
Yep.
I didn't ever thought of it that way, Sean.
Honestly,
that's the first time I've thought about the fact that AFC South and the NFC South
garbage
are just, they're doing a disrespect to an entire region of the compass. That's unacceptable.
Yes, that loves football, by the way. The Cowboys are the fourth worst team in the NFC, according to the odds board right now. How about that?
I blame the SEC as far as the AFC South and the NFC South being as bad as they are.
The
SEC just drains too much of the attention away from everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Where are the Cowboys, did you say?
Fourth worst among NFC teams on the odds board. The only teams worse than the Cowboys are the Saints, the Panthers, and the Giants.
What a miserable time to be a Dallas sports fan.
I know, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
They hate their owners and the two largest franchises in the city.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for hope that they're ever going to climb out of it.
Right.
If anything, that they'll even retain their basketball team if they want it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Mavericks might be in Las Vegas 3 years from now.
They might be. Highest ranked non-playoff teams from 2024 are the Niners and the Bengals. You have to pick one to make the playoffs again of the Niners and the Bengals. Who is it?
I'd say the Bengals.
Yeah.
The Bengals. Yesterday Colin Cowherd went on a long rant about how the Bengals have to spend money. And they've got to quit being stingy and all. Texans Cap made a really good point, which is that the Bengals have actually spent more money over the last 4 years both the Chiefs and the Eagles. Chiefs have actually been pretty parsimonious, and yet they're the way the cap works out, they're not super comfortable with the cap situation the way it is right now. But it's not like they've just spent to the hilt to try to go off and win. They've just the Eagles, especially despite the offseason they had, it was such a great offseason. A lot of that was driven by the draft in the last. And the last couple drafts, they've just done really well.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me, like the that the argument about, I think the argument for NFL teams being cheap is a little bit of a weaker argument than like baseball, where like in football, you have to spend a certain amount. You know what I mean? Like you and there aren't nearly the market inequities that there are in football, that there are in baseball with TV deals and whatnot. Like I don't know that. I mean, there are some teams that are more money conscious than others in the NFL. I don't know that there exists a cheap team anymore in the NFL. Like the Pirates are. Or the A's are in baseball, where they're just, they just don't spend, you know?
Yeah, and I think in football more so than in any of the other sports, because it is such a team game, there's so many other variables that matter that if you start just spending too freely or liberally, you lose sight of the things that really, really matter. Like, for whatever buzzword you want to use, whether it's culture or chemistry or anything like that, it's just going out and spending big money in football. If anything, it's more times than not, it leads to your ruination more so than it's a quick boost.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to just tie all those things in. That's where, with the Texans, I think the Texans spent aggressively last offseason, but it made a lot of sense, and it wasn't in such a way that it's going to handicap you in future years. But last year was a big spend. I'll be surprised if they're as aggressive in free agency this time around.
And again, they can't be because they don't have as much cap money to spend. Yeah. Like if they don't spend, it's not because they're cheap. It's because by the rules of the collective bargaining agreement, they just don't have as much money to pass around to people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's why, like when I see people calling the Bengals cheap, I understand that there's a culture rooted in that building of like charging for tube socks and Gatorades and stuff like that. And maybe that still exists. I don't know. But when it comes to player acquisition, I mean, they paid Joe Burrow the highest contract in football. You know, like it's the NFL is just different than these other sports where there actually are really cheap teams, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, listen to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app for an hour each day for your entry into the Slam Dunk to Vegas contest. If you win, you and three of your friends are going to be going to Circa in Vegas for the college basketball tournament. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. They have an amazing sports book at Circa. They've got the stadium swim, which is a cool watching experience. Plus, you'll have an extra $20,000 in your pocket to spend while you're in Las Vegas. Just download the Odyssey app, listen for an hour each day, and you'll get your daily entry to the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. Up next, mock draft injection time. The Athletic did a mock draft. Who do they have the Texans taking? I think Seth is going to be happy with this one. We'll do that coming up next.
You want to get the most for your money. That's why more Mazda buyers choose Ramsey Mazda. Lease a new 2025 Mazda CX-5 all-wheel drive, just $229 a month, or buy and get 0.9% APR financing up to 36 months. Start shopping now at RamseyMazda.com. Choose wisely. Choose Ramsey Mazda. Call 833-853-2970 for details. Excludes tax, title, and registration. Zero security deposit. VIN S0555242. MSRP 29990. Ends 3/31/25.
Guys, by now you've heard me talk about Collars & Co., makers of the dress collar polo. They've already sold over a million of these amazing shirts. Well, Collars & Co. just came out with the new Maverick Performance Blazer. This blazer is sharp and wrinkle resistant, so you can travel anywhere with it. Just throw it in your bag and it will remain wrinkle free. It even comes with security zip pockets, a sunglasses loop, and an optional pocket square. So visit collarsandco.com and use code TIKI for 20% off at Collars & Co.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
One night, one goal, stop suicide. On June 21st, New York City will host the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's milestone 30th Out of the Darkness Overnight Walk. Join thousands as we journey over 16 miles from dusk till dawn for a night of healing and hope while raising much-needed funds and awareness for this important cause. Register today at theovernight.org or call 888-THE-OVERNIGHT, 888-843-6837.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Live from the Moquette. Karam Injury Lawyers Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. Mock draft injection time. We've got the Athletic on the board today. Nick Baumgartner is one of their draft experts. He's got a mock draft that's up there, and we do this every day between now and the draft. And this is a big draft for the Texans. Not picking in the top three like they were a few years ago, but have a first-round pick, 25th overall. And let's page down and see what they do. By and large, so far, it's been interior offensive line by the experts out there. With yesterday's was a wide receiver, Matthew Golden from Texas.
Yes.
So we've that's been the consensus has been interior O-line so far. Small sample size. But let's see what Nick Baumgartner has to say. With the 25th pick in the 2025 Nick Baumgartner, the Athletic.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select. Oh, Seth is going to be happy. Kenneth Grant, defensive tackle, Michigan. There's your hoss in the interior of the offensive line, Seth.
And the first thing people say whenever I bring up Kenneth Grant's name is, he's 340 pounds. That's not the type of guy that DeMeco likes. Listen, he does not move like he's 340 pounds. He's a guy who got a lot better from the 2023 season to the 2024 season. He uses his hands really well, but he's very quick and agile for a 340-pounder. I was worried about whether, okay, this might be a guy who has a weight issue, but after talking to John Harris assures me that, no, he's put together really well. He does not look like a guy who's a big fatty. And I actually thought his body composition changed from 2023 to 2024. 2024, he had a little bit of that. Do you remember that Grady Jackson physique? It was like an apple on top with skinny legs. And Grady Jackson was really good. Vince Wilfork a little bit like that. And I'm not going to turn down Vince Wilfork.
No.
But I feel like he got thicker in his legs and his lower body going into last year, which hints at him really putting some work in the weight room. I like Kenneth Grant a lot. I think he can play all three downs. I'm not worried about his weight, mostly because he does not move like he weighs three. I'm skeptical that he actually weighed 340 pounds this season, because it doesn't look right the way he moves, and I think he might end up being one of these guys that does real well at the combine. If so, then that might be the thing that really vaults him above the 25th pick in the draft.
Okay.
So it might be a little bit of a pie in the sky notion
so
at this point.
Should we be rooting for him to do bad at the combine to keep him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it has to be like this. It has to be a little bit like Kyle Hamilton bad performance. Because remember, people were all down on Kyle Hamilton after he had a slow 40 time at the combine. But when you watched him run the 40, you could see, this is just a guy who hasn't spent a whole bunch of time learning how to run a 40 properly.
Yeah.
He basically ran 43 yards on his 40 because he had a bad start. He was running diagonally and everything. You can take 2 or 3 tenths of a second off your 40 time just by technique alone.
Yeah.
And I think it was apparent to see, Hamilton is a lot faster than his 40 time. You could see it. Like, Kamari Lasseter is a lot faster than his 40 time.
Yeah.
So I hope Keith Hamilton just has no clue how to actually run a 40. And or did I say Hamilton?
You said Keith Hamilton. Kenneth Grant is what you
mean. Kenneth Grant just doesn't know how to run his 40.
Yeah.
By the way, I apologize. I know people noted on the text line, I figured they would, that we seemed a little bit chippy in the last segment.
Oh.
I take full accountability for that by me. Multiple times just misreading or misunderstanding things you were saying, and then you getting agitated with me.
No worries. Okay.
It's going to happen again. I'll try to, my brain's not working quite
it's
right.
It's all good.
This morning.
But people don't realize, like, you and I both forget this stuff like 15 seconds after it happens.
Yeah.
So thank you for the reminders on the text page about how pissed we should be right now. As I hear you describe what we should be rooting for at the combine with Kenneth Grant, All I can hear is he's going to become a Raven. He's going to become like he's going to run slow, or he's going to show less agility than he looks like he has on film, and he's going to wind up next to Justin Matafreakin-Bike in the middle of their defensive line.
There's times where you see it with a lineman, especially they'll go off and they'll train with somebody for the combine, and they teach you all these techniques for getting out of your stance. It's different than coming out of a football stance, coming out of a sprinter stance with no blocks. It's kind of tricky, and it's one of those things where, like, you'll see sometimes guys at the combine, like, pop up out of their stance because they've been coached to take a big first step and everything. And if anything, the pre-combine instruction ends up damaging to those guys because they haven't had enough time to really ingrain it into their muscle memory.
Yeah.
So I hope he's one of those guys.
Yes.
That he's just a bad tester. Because I feel like he looks really athletic on film.
I'd love this pick if they did it. That would be great. Here's what Baumgartner says about Kenneth Grant. There's a real chance Grant has one of those unforgettable tests. It's also he's listening in on the conversation. There's a real chance Grant has one of those unforgettable testing weeks at the combine and rockets his stock into the top 15. If he doesn't, he could be in line to slip. A phenomenal athlete at 340 pounds, Grant is still more traits than production. Do you agree with that part?
I don't know. I think that
pretty productive in the film you were posting the other day.
Well, and he looks pretty polished in a lot of ways. I think this is something that happens, and I'm always surprised that some of the actual people that are pretty dialed in on the draft, they make the mistake of using a scheme that a guy is in against him. Because I'll see people say, "Well, there's times where Kenneth Grant is slow to get off the ball." He's playing in a read and react scheme where a lot of times the defensive linemen aren't supposed to get off the ball all that quickly. They're reading the offensive lineman in front of him. And, yeah, in those times he gets off the ball slowly, which I always look at as, all right, it's a guy that actually cares about playing his responsibilities.
Yeah.
Because when he is part of a blitz or when he is supposed to just get across the line of scrimmage, he does just fine. And with D'Amico's coaching and playing in this scheme, I wouldn't worry about that at all. So I like him a lot. Barring him just looking awful in the at the combine or something, I'm leaning right now towards being surprised if he's there at 25.
Yeah.
But it's also it's a huge crapshoot with the draft.
It's a crapshoot with the draft. But if you're trying to minimize the bust factor on the 25th pick, I would say with D'Amico Ryans as your head coach, drafting a defensive lineman probably minimizes the bust factor. Like D'Amico has gotten the best out of every defensive lineman, it feels like, that's come through that door since he got here, you know?
Did he mention anybody else as a possibility
in
his mock draft?
He did. Said, don't rule out Gray Zabel, offensive lineman from North Dakota State.
Yeah.
The top center/interior O-lineman as the Texans' first round.
So when we talked about Gray Zabel last week when somebody picked him, I feel like I ended up apparently I sounded way more down on him than I meant to, because we just started talking about guys from smaller schools and everything, which you would think, like, hey, Seth, you went to a small school, you should be all about those guys. Yeah, but there's a little bit of self, I hold those guys to a higher standard, and I understand the challenges they're up against.
Yeah.
So I start getting finicky when people fawn over somebody because they had a good Senior Bowl or something. I really do like everything I've seen of Gray Zabel. I think that there's still more of an unknown because he hasn't consistently gone against studs every single week. But that's my hesitancy there in taking a guy in the first round is like sometimes those are the guys that are awesome second round picks because you don't have as much of a sample size of them, so there's just a little bit more unknown, and I think that's the way that Nick operates as well.
Yeah, I think particularly, and by the way, they've got Zabel going 36th to Jacksonville in this mock draft, so he's early second. I think what poisoned the perception with people last week, Seth, when you were talking about it, is your Trevor Penning's name was invoked adjacent to that conversation.
Yeah, we got off on a Trevor Penning tangent.
Yeah.
And people thought I was making a direct comparison to Trevor Penning.
You were not.
It's not what I was doing whatsoever.
No.
If it came off that way, listen, everybody, I've already conceded. I've been extra dumb these last couple days. Okay.
They've got it's a 3-round mock. You want to quick touch on the other two picks here, real quick?
Give them to me, Sean.
Okay, here we go, Seth. With the 58th overall pick, the Houston Texans select Jonah Savania, guard, Arizona.
Oh.
Not watched any film on old Jonah yet. But fills a need.
At this point, if they don't draft an interior offensive lineman in the first two rounds, and if they haven't addressed the position in free agency, that's where the poop's going to hit the fan, I think, in the fan base.
Yes, 100%.
And you know what? I'm one of the people that will have been guilty of fawning over Kenyon Green's new physique during training camp last year.
Same.
And then just being let down by the actual performance on the field.
Yep.
I've already used up all my, hey, well, look, we got to give them a chance to play this out. Apparently they like these young guys on the interior offensive line, and we'll see if we can coach them up. I can't do that for an entire other offseason. I'll be really disappointed if they don't draft interior offensive line sometime in the first two rounds or in free agency.
In free agency. If there's not a new face on the interior of the offensive line by the time day two of the draft rolls around, I think a lot of people are going to be upset, right?
Yeah.
Here's the third round pick. Let's do this. As long as we got a minute here. With the 89th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the Houston Texans select Isaiah Bond, wide receiver, Texas. That's not bad. Isaiah Bond's a good player, man.
Yeah.
I'd be down with that. So they will have gone in this mock draft, Seth, they will have gone interior defensive tackle that you like, guard that TBD, and then a wide receiver in the third round from an SEC school.
Right, and who's fast.
Who's like traits, tell me, yeah.
That's one of the things when we talked about Deebo Samuel earlier. It's not just the fact that he hasn't produced all much in the last few years.
Style.
It's that he's a unique player with a unique skill set that feels more like gadgetry at this point in his career, whereas what I want to really see on the field, both offensively and defensively, is just blistering speed. So, yeah, give me a twitchy guy, and I can take it. He's not Tank Dell small.
No.
He's a smaller guy, but he's not Tank Dell small.
Yep, it's a good way to put it.
He's normal small.
Normal small. That's a good way to put it. Petty cast coming up next here. We've got a few petties that we're going to get to. Text in the things you're petty about. 713-572-4610. The weekly Tuesday petty cast is coming up next.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.